Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Midweek here. And we just had a great sunny spell here in Seattle. Early March sunny spells are the best because we're just coming out of the seven years of clouds. We just had sun. So I'm in a good mood. It is Wednesday. I'm also in a good mood because we have Walter with us, Walter Johnson. He is a mobile home guy from Sonos Capital. So I'm sure we're going to have some good wisdom coming your guys' way today. So Walter, thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Sure. No, absolutely. And you said it was sunny in Seattle. So, I mean, let's just talk about that and just skip this whole podcast.
I know, right? It's an amazing feat. It's actually not sunny right now, but it's okay because we did have 3 days. So I'm still happy.
That is awesome.
All right, man. Well, I told you before we get on here, we like to start with stories. I'm sure you got a good one. So take us to the beginning of your story and tell us how you got started in real estate.
Yeah. So I think when people say things happen for a reason. So I was working at UPS in Ontario, California, and I literally hurt my back. I mean, it's a back-breaking job. So, you know, props out to those people. And it allowed me to actually stay at home, go to physical therapy, and learn about real estate. And that's actually how I learned a lot about real estate. So, so I read every book that I could. And, UPS didn't pay that much at the time. So what I did was that I would buy a book and, you know, props out to you, Borders and Barnes and Noble. So I would buy like a $15 book and read it like that same day and then take it back and be like, nah, I didn't actually like the book. Right. And I did that so many times. Right. And I learned so much about real estate because, you know, I really couldn't afford the book. And then I met a mentor named Ed Garcia, and he owned, shopping centers and anchors to where they had supermarkets. I mean, he was big. Warehouses before warehouses was a thing to actually invest in. And I used to go to his office and he would tell me about how he would work deals. And he was like, Walter, you actually have to learn this stuff. I was losing $20,000 a month on one property. And I was like, wow. Right. And back in, I think this was, 2000, maybe 1999, 2000, right around there. $20,000 a month is a lot of money, but $20,000 a month back then was a ton of money. So I was listening and I used to just go to his office and he had a son and his son didn't really like to learn about real estate investment. So he took me under his wing and that's kind of how I got started. So I moved to Arizona and, you drive on the 10 from California and you used to see these billboards. Arizona's not the case like that anymore, but you see these billboards and it was like brand new home starting from like $35,000, right? And I got this Mustang and I think I paid like $22,000 for this brand new Mustang. So I'm like, hey, I can buy a house for almost this brand new Mustang that I bought. And that turned me on to real estate buying in Arizona.
So there you go.
A little bit how I got started, right?
It's funny how, a lot of the times when something seemingly bad happens, it can be a blessing in disguise. Like when you hurt your back, you had to stay at home, not work for a little while, probably didn't like it at the time, but looking back, that gave you the opportunity to get the education to kind of springboard to where you are today.
I mean, it was bad. Like, you take that little, I think it was like a green and white Barnes and Noble's bag. And then I would just walk to my car in the parking lot in the mall and read that book in like 2 or 3 hours and just turn around and like take the book back. right and exchange it or get my money back. So I definitely thank Barnes and Nobles and Borders books at the time.
There you go.
Right.
Are they even businesses anymore? I don't know.
I don't think so. I think they're not in business because of me,
you're the reason
they didn't make any money off of me. Yeah, so I have no idea.
Nice, man. So it sounds like you did get not only education through the books, you also had a mentor, which is crucial. How did you end up finding, what was his name, Ed, in the beginning?
Yeah, Ed Garcia. So my mom bought this computer. It was like a compact, and it came with like AOL, that disk, and you start it up. You know, you put that disk in, and it sounded like, you know, you're starting like an old Chevy. And then, like, I was just looking at real estate, and I found out he was in Ontario, where, you know, I worked at UPS. So I reached out to him, and he met me. And I kid you not, this is actually what happened. I don't think I ever told anybody this. So he called me, and I was going to school. I was working at UPS Monday through Friday, and then Sundays as well, right? Because you get overtime and you get paid more. And then I was working at Blockbuster as well, Blockbuster Video, because I love, they give you like 5 free movie rentals a week. And so that's why I did it, because I'm a movie buff. And so, and I was going to school for computer science. So Ed calls me at home. He's like, "Hey, I got your message." He's interviewing me, basically. He's grilling me. He's like, "Hey, what do you do?" And I said, "Well, I'm working jobs at UPS, and I'm working Blockbuster, and then I'm going to school for computer science." And he says, "Okay, well, when did you get started? And or when did you start school?" And I was like, "Oh, I just started. And this semester." And he's like, "How long do you have left?" And I was like, "Well, I got 4 years." And he's like, "You can be a millionaire in 4 years." And I kid you not, I never went to school again. Like, I dropped out, right? And just listened to him. And that's how Ed and I actually connected. That's when I started listening to him. I went to school later on, but that's what happened.
That is the crazy thing about, now, I'm not against education, but it is true that if you're going to college to make money, you can be a millionaire in 4 years if you don't go to college. You know, if you get into real estate, start as an agent, start wholesaling, do whatever. And I mean, you can definitely go from zero to a million in 4 years. And if you choose that path, you don't need to go to college. I was told that I had to go to college, or that was the message that was kind of subliminally sent to me.
Right.
I went into corporate for a long time. It was a long time before I actually got into real estate, and I wish someone had given me that message at the very beginning. So sounds like you lucked out, and that is half of life is luck. So, moving us on, let's talk about how you've got into mobile homes, mobile home parks. So,
So I got into mobile home parks. So I bought single family homes. I bought apartment buildings. I bought land. I bought new builds. I bought, you know, I was a guy to where, especially in Arizona at the time, you can actually put, let's say you put a couple thousand dollars on a new build, and then you wait 6-7 months towards actually getting built. And then once you close on it, you turn around and flip it, you make your like $20,000 to $40,000.
So that off of a couple thousand?
Yeah.
Wow,
that's great. Like Arizona was, it was the gold mine, and it still is as well. But I think that ship has sailed. And so that was the thing. And then you can buy, you know, Arizona just probably in the early 2000s was a great time. But and it still is, don't get me wrong. But what I found out is that I was buying single family homes. You know, you make your $500-$700 a month in positive cash flow, but you have to buy so many of them to actually make it worth it, is because when they're vacant, when you have repairs, when that roof actually needs to be replaced, that AC, you know, you're not really making any cash flow, right? And so, you know, I had a whole bunch of single family homes. I think I had like a couple dozen of them. And I was like, this is not where I want to, like, it sounds great at a cocktail party, is saying I have apartment buildings and single family homes. But I wanted cash flow. So I started looking at I was a mortgage broker, and a guy by the name of Jerry, what he did was that he actually sold homes. He would buy homes and then sell them to park owners. And he told me, "Have you ever looked at mobile home parks?" And I was like, "No, I got this pretty stuff. They're in great neighborhoods." And I should have listened to him. That was 2005, 2006. But I didn't get into mobile home parks till probably 2017. I started studying them, learning about them 2013, but I didn't buy my first one till about 2017.
Okay. I mean, that's still a great time to get into it. It definitely popped off in popularity probably in the early 2020, is my guess.
Yeah. I mean, they did. It's because, you know, office buildings wasn't doing well. Apartment buildings, they had the eviction memorandum to where you couldn't evict anyone. And people, a lot of people, investors were like, where do we place our capital? And then mobile home parks started to kind of, you know, appear. And now it's, I think it's like the hot thing right now. I think it's more or less like Benny Babies and crypto. You know, I would put mobile home parks.
A little bit better than that, I'd hope. But
yeah, no, they are better investments, but they're popular. So
yeah. So take us to your first deal you got with a mobile home park. How'd you find it?
The first deal. There was a couple deals that I actually doubled escrow because I was scared of buying them. There was a few in Arizona, so I was like, hey, they're actually really good deals, but I don't know enough. So I doubled escrow and made money, or signed them and wholesaled them. And then I didn't pull my first one down till like 2018. It was like 155 spaces.
Oh, that's great. How do you find them?
I market myself. So I
cold callers, mailers.
I do mailers. Yeah, I've been doing mailers. That's actually how I found Jerry Ruska. I mailed to him. And then, yeah, he told me about mobile home parks. He was a borrower when I was doing a mortgage brokering, but I do direct to sellers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we do too. And I'm always not on the fence, but I keep switching between mediums because I'm trying to find, or, you know, we're always trying to find the best way to find off-market deals. We've done mailers, we've done texting, we've done ads, Google ads, we've done cold calling. Right now, we're really hard into cold calling. Is mailers been your tried and true, you know, from the get-go, or have you tried different methods of generating off-market leads?
Yeah, so I do mailers and cold calling. I found out that, you know, my mailers, I think good conversion ratio. So I'll kind of give you some secret sauce here. So, you know, let's say I do 1,000 mailers. I'm just going to throw out something, right? And we get a 2% callback. And so we get, you know, let's just say 200 people that call us or something like that, or less than that. But
you mean 20?
Yeah, 20. It's actually a little bit more than that. I think the last one we did was 10,000. So we get 100. So we get 100 calls, or a little bit more than that. But every 30 calls ends up a deal.
Every 30 calls ends up a deal. Interesting. Okay.
Yes. Yes. And so when I work backwards and saying, and so if it's every 30 calls that actually ends up a deal, how many mailers do I actually have to mail out?
Yeah. That makes sense.
So I think, yeah, I think we did, it was low. It was like 1%. So we did a 10,000, we got 120 calls and we got 4 deals.
Wow, that's better than what we get for mailers. 1% for callback is about right, but I think it's a little bit higher than one every 30 deals that we at least make an offer to. Maybe we're looking we're offering too low, but you know, you never know.
Yeah, that's my like what will we actually want to take down? So it's you know whether they want to sell right then, whether it actually has great bones, whether it's it's a lot of variables in that. But what we consider a deal is probably one every 30 calls.
So let's talk a little bit about your guys's business model, about your when you look at these deals, when you underwrite them, what are you looking for? And in terms of what will you consider a deal, where, you know, the metro size, is it public, private utilities, that kind of stuff. And then also when you go into it, what is your value add plan?
Okay. So metro size and public utilities, private utilities, I mean, everyone's looking for the cream of the crop. So I always say deals aren't had, they're actually made. So you actually have, you know, for us, we actually look at how can we look at this particular property and actually make a deal out of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we purchase properties with private utilities, nothing like a lagoon or a, you know, nothing like that. But, yeah. you know, if they had a leach field,
well, yeah, septic, you're fine.
Exactly.
Most people say no. Actually, our best performing park, I mentioned we only have two, but the one that performs the best out of those two is a well and septic. We have had to replace a couple septics, which was a lot of money. It was like $30,000 each, but it's still, you know, over the long run, it's still performing the best.
Yeah, and over time, I mean, it changes your expense ratio from like, let's say, like 8 or 10%, but it's still actually a great park. So, you know, I guess everybody wants the cream of the crop or the pretty girl at the dance, but but there, you know, there's some parks out there that are just performing really well, and they have a septic.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or private utilities. So yep, we actually look at those as well.
Yep. Yeah. So value add, what's your guys' plan when you get into them? Are you looking for, like, do you buy at a 10 cap? Is there any like cap rate that you look for on the acquisition, or is it only the exit?
Yeah. So that's actually a kind of not a sensitive subject, but a subject I'm glad you brought up. You can actually look at a park and say, I want to buy this park and it's a 7 cap. But if I raise rents or decrease expenses, is because the seller's actually pulling a salary off, and maybe it's $80,000 a year. And when I buy that park, I eliminate that salary and I could raise rents. Now that 7 cap actually became a 12 cap. So, it's hard to actually look at a park for face value saying, hey, it's a 7 cap, let me pass on it. You actually, to in our business model, you have to look at more than just the going cap rate, the cap rate upon entry, I would say that.
Yeah. And do you guys have, like you mentioned, cash flow is what you invest for. Do you have a cash on cash return that you want as when it's stabilized?
When it's stabilized? No. Well, yes. But when it's stabilized, no, we don't. And the reason why I say that, well, I would say yes and no. When we actually buy a park, we look at double digit returns cap rate. Like day one. So when we were actually
cap rate.
Yeah. Our cap rate, excuse me. Yes.
Cash on cash.
Yes. Cash on cash and cap rate. So when I look at a double digit cap rate, it's on return. So, or excuse me, when we close. So let's say, for example, the example that I showed you, once we actually close and we eliminate the $80,000, of the seller salary. So with that being said, so day one, once we close, that's eliminated. So we're actually in a double digit cap rates. And then cash on cash returns, we look at high teens, or say mid to high teens upon day one. Close
on day one. Wow, that's great. Yeah. I can't find any of those deals out there these days. But
the one I just mentioned to you. So if you're buying like at an 8 cap and you take out the expenses, you're at 11 cap or excuse me, you know, let's say you're at a 12% cash on cash return or 9% cash on cash return, and then you eliminate things on day one, you're in double digits.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Cool, man.
But I think that, you know, going directly to owners is the key.
Yeah. 100%. We, you know, I have bought on market, have I? Oh yeah. I bought one deal on market. It was a self-storage facility. It did turn out to work, you know, it worked out, but I have every once in a while, I'll check the market, look at, you know, self-storage, mobile home RV, to see if there's anything out there. Rarely do I find anything. And every time I do look, I feel like it has been a waste of my time.
True.
We own in Indianapolis and then Dallas, Fort Worth.
Okay.
And so I'm, you know, Indiana, Texas. We're also, we'll look anywhere in the Sun Belt, to be honest, but those are the two ones that we really try to focus on. I feel like that people kind of fall into two buckets when it comes to buying properties. They either develop relationships with brokers, they call them every single day, or they look off market. I never hear people doing them both. It's probably because it just takes too much time to do them both. But do you develop relationships with brokers too, or is it all off market?
Nope, I have a few, like one or two out of this whole planet. Nothing that I'm really against brokers. I just realized that when you actually can look at a owner's eyes and shake hands, you get a better deal. Yeah. I think brokers, they'll say, hey, the income is this, the expenses of this, we're going to sell it at this, and that's actually close to retail. And that's, and to me, in my professional opinion, that's the reason why parks actually are high and have low cap rates on the retail side. When you talk to someone, I mean, say for example, hey, I want to buy this park and you want $1 million retail. Great. Okay. Mr. and Mrs. Seller, well, how about this? Instead of actually hiring a broker, going through a lot of tire kickers, going through a lot of people that's going to waste your time and letting it sit on the market for 8 or 9 months for a real offer, how about I give you $800,000 in 45 days? Would you accept that? Most likely they will. So when I buy, I made $200,000 in equity, but I got a better cap rate and better cash on cash return.
Yep. There you go. I love it. Yeah. All right, man. It looks like we have run down the clock, so it's time to jump into the quick question round. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. Starts with books or really any form of education. Could be movies, YouTube channels, whatever. Just give me two recommendations, one for general life wisdom and then one for real estate.
Oh, those are good ones. For a book, I would say Driven by Larry H. Miller.
Okay.
That's a great book. For life, Marcus Aurelius.
Meditations?
Yes, 100%.
Nice. That's one of my favorite books. Yep. It's a good toilet book. A lot of, you know, little snippets of wisdom in there.
I read it every morning.
There you go.
Yeah, so before I go to the gym, I wake up at 5 a.m. That's the first thing. I walk downstairs, read that, and then go to the gym.
That's a good routine. I approve.
Yeah.
All right. Next question is for your younger self. So let's go back to the Walter who was still working at UPS back in 2000, whatever. Go back to him, look him in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
Ooh, minimize distractions. That's what it, yes.
That is a good piece of advice and super hard to follow. Because distractions are everywhere, especially in real estate, because there's so many different ways to do it, so many different things you can do. It's really hard to focus in and really, you know, excel at one thing, mobile home parks, apartment buildings, self-storage. And so just, you know, eliminating those distractions is difficult, but it is a good piece of advice.
Yes.
All right. Next question is about the U.S. It is a big place. There's a lot of opportunity out there. Give me the single metro you're most excited about investing in today.
Phoenix, Arizona.
Phoenix, of course. Yeah.
Did you hear? It was actually in the paper. Phoenix, Dallas, or Phoenix, Texas. Phoenix, Texas, Florida is a future.
I believe it. That's where most people are moving.
Yes.
I've never actually looked in Arizona for deals because I heard that Arizona has had the highest volatility in prices. It has had, you know, great growth, mm-hmm. but I've heard that the volatility, the ups and downs in the Arizona markets are pretty high, which is a good opportunity to buy low, but it also scares me a bit. Have you found that in Arizona?
Yes, that is true. I mean, I had three Teslas, so there's no... I'm not talking about Tesla, but Arizona is kind of like a Tesla stock. Like it goes up, then it goes down. But that's actually how you make money. But overall, it's that you're going to do well. Arizona has been doing extremely well since the mid 80s, okay. As far as real estate. Yes.
There you go. All right. Next question is, you've already mentioned this, but we're going to ask it anyways. It's about finding deals. It all starts with getting in contact with the seller and writing up that purchase agreement. So what is your favorite way to generate leads and find new deals?
That is it. I would say, you know, letters and reaching out to owners. And the reason why I say that, not just to buy, but for actually education purposes. So when you're actually dealing with the broker, they're going to give you their view based on a part that they have, I would say, no skin in the game. But when you actually talk to a owner, they're going to give you so much valuable information because they have skin in the game. So use that not only to buy, but for education purposes.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Next question is about lessons learned. Not every deal that we get into goes the way we expect it. A lot of times wrench is thrown into the mix, but that's when we get to learn our biggest lessons and take them to the next deal. So what was the deal that went a little sideways for you? And then what was the lesson that you pulled from it?
All of them. I mean, all of them usually go sideways. I mean, they're called wrenches for a reason. But a wrench means you can actually fix something. And so a little of them, you know, most of them go sideways because it's the unexpected. So I would say just expect the unexpected and don't, I would say don't get discouraged. It's just a part of the, I say a part of the game. I think a lot of people expect that it's going to go smoothly and they don't pull, you know, they don't go through with it. But that's how you learn. That's how you get good. And that's how you buy things.
Yep. That reminds me of, what's that guy's name? Ryan Holiday, his book, The Obstacle is the Way. Mm-hmm. I read it a while ago. It's, you know, similar to Meditations and all the Stoics, but I love his philosophy. It's just problems are, that is the solution. You know, having problems, having them pop up, that is what you should expect. And that is the way to your goals. And so when they pop up, you should be thankful. You should be like, this is me getting to my goal. I just got to solve this problem.
Yes, absolutely. Be a problem solver.
There you go. All right. That leads us to the very last question. This is for the listeners. I'm sure people want to reach out, get in contact with you. This is a two-parter. Where can they find you? And then what can they expect when they reach out?
Yes. So they can find me, Walter, at sonoscapital.com, sonoscapital.com, or reach out to me on my office, 480-674-2035. What they can expect from me is probably just education. I'm here to help people. I've got a lot of help throughout my years, and I'm here to help people not be in competition with them. There's just too many opportunities in the world for me or for somebody else to be in competition with other people. So create your the life you want, and I'm just here to assist any way I can.
Perfect. All right, I will put that link in the show notes. So if you guys want to reach out to Walter, just click the little more in the description. It'll pull down that full description, and there you can find his link. All right, Walter, that wraps it up. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Thank you. Yeah, have a good day. Have a great day.
Absolutely. For everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. So if you guys have any questions, reach out to me, Gabe, therealestateinvestingclub.com. If you want to support the show, just give us a like, subscribe, share, all that jazz. Other than that, hope you guys have a great week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page, click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form, fill that out, and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.